for it. We'll just get started.
You all know that I'm Paul, and maybe what you don't know is that I've been bringing unresolved questions to Holden now for more than 20 years, so I thought, why should this be any exception? It's clear to me that there is something going on in our universe at the moment around the words spiritual and religious. They get tossed about, bantered about, and often said in opposition to each other. And I'm just curious what people think is going on when that happens. Barbara Brown Taylor, in her latest book, says that if she had a dollar for every time she heard somebody say they were spiritual but not religious, she would be a millionaire. And so I'm curious at the kind of perceived opposition, or how we could discover maybe a more creative tension between the two. So I asked a group of friends here in the village to give some thought to that and to get our discussion started. Nancy started her sermon Sunday night with the five or six most influential people of the last millennium. I'm happy for you to know that our discussion tonight is led by forerunners in the most influential folks of the next millennium. As the Republic of Maverickstan takes hold as a world power, and the Holden School is recognized for the Ivy League instruction that it has, I'm sure that issues like spiritual and religious and others will be solved right here. So, anyway, I asked each of them to think about how they would define the terms, how the terms connect, if they've got a metaphor that helps bring the terms together, if there's some sense of what happens when one loses the other. Religion loses its spirit, spirituality loses its religion. But mostly I wanted you to take it wherever you took it. Jacob, you want to start?
No, not really.
I'll start.
But I can.
Steve wants to start.
I'll start.
Go, Steve.
I'll start with a couple of analogies and an end of the analogy that I thought of there. First one is religious is to traditional, as spiritual is to modern. Another one is spiritual is to experience, as religious is to definition. So I grew up in
Second one?
Spiritual is to experience, as religious is to definition. So I grew up in a home that was neither religious or spiritual. I would say it was a-religious or a-spiritual, and it certainly wasn't anti-religious or spiritual, but it wasn't pro-religious or spiritual. And it wasn't until I was 13 years old or so that I started attending church on my own. And the people that were leading that fellowship and sort of really formative in my initial experience, with those people, the word religious had a sort of negative connotation. And because of that, mine did too. In my mind, had to do with people seeking God through religious practices. And in my experience at that point, I didn't think of really Christianity as a religion, but I thought of it as more of a relationship. And in my mind, going to church each week and just going through the motions had nothing to do with being a Christian. And then I started attending a Lutheran church. And that really challenged me for a while. In the last session, Peter talked about dissonance, and I experienced a lot of dissonance and for a long time as a result of not being able to harmonize that experience as a young Christian and the way I'd started with this Lutheran church I started going to. Because the reason I started going to was my mom, after I started getting involved with this fellowship group, decided she wanted to start going back to church and she wanted somebody to go with her, so I volunteered. And she chose a Lutheran church of all places, and in a lot of ways that was sort of the antithesis of what I was used to, or what I was looking for. You know, there was, you all know it, there was bright robes, overpowering organ music, small slices of scripture reading, liturgy, memorized prayers, fancy language, all that kind of stuff. In my mind, that was religious. And I was used to guitars, jeans, t-shirts, studying chunks of scripture, spontaneous prayers, you know, more informal atmosphere. Well, I didn't have a very high opinion of the word spiritual either. In fact, in my mind, religious maybe had a more positive connotation than spiritual. Spiritual was a word that was sort of used by, was used by New Agers. It was used by people who were seeking God, but they weren't Christians. In fact, it seemed to me that people who used words, define themselves as spiritual, were antagonistic towards Christianity. Maybe looking back, they were just antagonistic towards organized religion, but that's what it came across to me. So over the last several years, I've sort of softened my view towards both the words religious and spiritual. Because in our world, the vast majority of people, I think, are seeking God in some way. Since there seems to be some innate need to know God or to seek God. And I'm not sure exactly why that's why. I think we're all of us are seeking meaning out of life. All of us are seeking some kind of purpose beyond ourselves. We want to feel better about ourselves than we do, because we know we're not who we want to be. We're all dealing in some way with our guilt and inadequacy and our failings, and so we see God. I'm going to close with that. I'm not sure this is a great analogy, but I'll close with another analogy. Think of a coin. Heads is to tails is to heads. So those are different from each other, but they're intimately related. They're two sides of the same coin. Religion and spirituality are intimately related, but also different from each other. I believe they're the two sides of the same coin as well. They're both people who are religious and people who define themselves as spiritual are both, both those people are seeking and attempting to seek and know God, connect with God, or connect with something greater than themselves.
Thanks, Steve. Great start. Who wants to go next? Great.
I guess I see religion as a set of practices that are in their best manifestation designed or practiced in order to witness. And that spirituality is more the experience of holiness. Or of holiness might be defining the narrative that God, the connectedness of all things, so religion certainly can detract a person from spirituality. When the heart is closed, then it becomes just going through motions. But I think it also can be really effective in laying the groundwork for experiencing spirituality. When I, week after week, year after year, decade after decade, I hear the Bible read, and so when I hear something now from the Bible, and that happens in religious practice, often in worship, and I might be thinking about the hymn I have to play right after the reading, or I might be napping, or I might be, but I hear a lot of them, but it's often the religious practice is a habit. And it's not a, it's not, I don't always come prepared for it or engaged in it, and but it has, it's like broad, what do you call it when you scatter seeds, broadcast seeds, that you know, some of them take root, and I think that that's, so it's a numbers game, really. No. No, I think that the rituals of my church tradition, of the Eucharist and of baptism, and of scripture and of song, of prayer. I mean, praying is something I'm not very good at, but I do it here every night. And it's a practice. And every now and then I feel like prayer means something to me. And if I weren't doing it every night, or every week, or if I didn't have a religious framework, a regular practice of religion, I think it'd be less likely for me to get in that space. So, to go to the broadcast seeds. I mean, if you've got seeds that are, you know, buttonweed, and you're throwing them in your cornfield. Well, now that Roundup is there, it's not such a problem. But certainly, there's bad religion, and you can sow some pretty bad stuff out there, and I think that the vulnerable with the open heart to the bad stuff, it's, you know, can lead to some pretty scary spiritual spaces. But that's just a general some ideas on spirituality and religion.
Heidi, you want to go next?
Yes. One thing, I don't know a lot of things for certain, and I will fully admit that, but I do know one thing for certain is that we're all just trying to figure it out. You know, it doesn't matter if you're 20 years old, it doesn't matter if you're 30, 40, 50, it doesn't matter how old you are, we're all just trying to figure it out. And I think that theme of trying to just figure things out it's ageless. It's been going on since the beginning of time. We're just trying to figure out what we're doing here. And I remember when I was in high school, I read a book, James Michener, The Source. I heard some nods. Okay, good. To give a preview, it's a book about an archaeological dig in which they find a well, and they're able, through the through digging through this entire, digging down to this last level, they can kind of go back and trace back all these civilizations that have depended on this source, this well for water, and all the people who lived on it. And one of the first, you know, civilizations that lived next to this source of water, Michener takes kind of the relics that were found around this well and writes the story about them. And so he finds, it becomes this huge, you know, anthropologic epic novel about it. But one of the first stories is that it was about these primitive people who first moved from hunting and gathering to agriculture. And when this story happened, the wife who picked up the grain that her family had harvested for the first time ever, so that means they don't have to go and follow the mastodons, whatever it was that they were hunting, and she threw it in the water as a source of sacrifice. Because she felt that this harvest didn't come just because we did it. It came because there is a sense of higher power, or there's something else out there, and I'm going to sacrifice this in order to give thanks for this supernatural thing. And so when it comes to terms of spirituality and religion, I think that religion is just I think spirituality is sort of what that woman was sacrificing to. It's everything that's out there, and you can't define it. You can't. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. religion is what people do to try to define it. And they try to put it in rituals, they put it in church. And I think in some ways it's successful. And that's why religion has continued throughout this whole time. But I don't think the world started with religion. I think the world started with spirituality, and then it's all of these little things that people are trying to dig to it to try to figure it out. And that we don't have all the answers. And I think if we're truly honest with ourselves, we all kind of go through times of ourselves when we do honestly say, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. Maybe that's a way of saying, I'm agnostic right now. Yeah, I think there's something else out there. I'm going to sacrifice my wheat into that river. But I don't know where it's going to. I can go to church and I don't feel anything. What's wrong with me? I don't feel the spiritual side. Well, maybe that church isn't touching that spiritual side for you, and I think that's okay. And I think the second we get trapped, or the second we start thinking that religion is the only way to spirituality, that's the second when we stop sacrificing and stop putting that wheat into the river.
Jacob, go for it.
Sure. I think mine builds a lot off of Heidi's thoughts, actually, because I don't like to separate the two of them, but when I do, I think of spirituality as being something that's very personal. It's a person's own experience and way of identifying with the supernatural in the world. And I think of religion as being sort of a communal expression built up over time, you know, of a lot of different spiritual practices, you know, that have been put together into the doctrine and everything. So spiritual is very, this personal religion is a communal expression sort of built up over time that helps connect people and connect those personal experiences. And what I think of, you know, a synonym that I've heard many times for religion is, you know, religion is a spiritual, you know, religions are spiritual traditions. And so you know, you can't. It's a way of bringing together, you know, people's personal experiences and traditions into something more communal, and that got me sort of thinking, because when I lived in Seattle, I went to a church that for the entire time I lived there, I said it didn't give me any spiritual satisfaction. It was a church that, you know, was very much just a straight traditional Lutheran church. And the thing that I always said kept me there was the community. It was the people that I met there. It was the handbell choir. That's the whole reason I joined the church. It was because they invited me into their community. And through that community, I got more and more and more involved in the church. But I always said that I didn't feel spiritually satisfied. I didn't feel like, you know, I just felt like I was going through the motions there. But the more I've thought about that, the more I've realized that communal feel was, you know, the communal love and the support was, so it was my way of identifying my spiritual side with that church, because that was what drew me and that was what kept me there. And that's sort of been my experience with religion, is this sort of very communal feel.
Great. Liz or Yoda?
I'll jump in. I didn't put all my thoughts together in any cohesive way, but just kind of jotted things down over the last couple of days, and most things have been mentioned in one way or another with all these different people. But like Jacob, I definitely had spirituality feels like my own personal conviction and connection to God, Jesus, and the Spirit, where religion seems more like the framework for that practice, and the community sense, the connection with others of similar beliefs or convictions feels more like the framework part of it. And one sort of metaphor I thought for is that if spirituality is sort of the words or the idea, religion to me then was the specific language or translation or the words to the actual idea of my spirituality, and that for different people that may come down in different languages, or where the spirituality may, the core part of it may be the same. And like someone said, it feels like the tradition, religion feels like the tradition and background to the grounding in the organized church that I grew up with, but kind of grew to feel the spirituality part on a more personal level. And one thing that I just started in Seattle this fall when I moved back to Seattle after living up here for a while, is a 9-month prayer practice called SEAL, Spiritual Exercises for Everyday Life. And I said the word spiritual, I was trying to think, well, how did that relate back? So I'll just read a little background of where this program came from. What are the spiritual exercises? St. Ignatius of Loyola, founder of the Jesuit order, developed his spiritual exercises so that people could retreat for 30 days of prayer and silence to grow in their relationship with God and learn to listen for the voice of the Spirit in their lives. Eventually, he also adapted the exercises for people who could not, for various reasons, go away for the 30 days. So that's those of us in Seattle, not going away for the 30 days. This adaptation, called the 19th Annotation, is the basis of the spiritual exercises in everyday life retreat, referred to as SEAL. And it invites people to go through the exercises with the guidance of a spiritual director over a period of 9 months. So I kept thinking about this, like what in this, could I substitute the word religion in here for spiritual? And I never could pinpoint why I couldn't, but to me, just that whole description and the feeling of the experience I've had in the first month so far feels like a spiritual connection, not a religious connection. So I don't know exactly what makes that so, but I realize now it's the spiritual part that fits with that. And so as I kept thinking back and forth, I kept contradicting my own thoughts as far as, is spirituality kind of the general big circle and religion falls within that? But I could also see it the other way around, that maybe religion is the larger circle and spirituality is a subset or more of a core of that. So I can see it both ways. So it was kind of like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? I'm not sure which is based on what. But another metaphor I was kind of thinking about for it is with religion being kind of the framework for the practice, I could see that as being a loom and the warp of a loom, and the spirituality being the many different kinds of weaving threads or textures and colors and every different way that could be expressed. And when I thought about it long enough, I could see myself sort of switching that around too. So, but I think conversely, they sort of fit that complement part for each other. So that's.
Thank you.
I like that analogy. when I started thinking about this, my head was all over the place. It was kind of this. And so I went straight to the internet and just looked up definitions for a start. And so everyone's been talking about definitions, but that's what I kind of thought about. And found that the definition for religion is a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. It's mainly ritualistic and dealing with moral codes, mostly set upon from society. Spirituality is the quality or fact of being spiritual. But it's immaterial in nature and shown in thought and in life. And I just started thinking about those definitions and then just definitions in general in society. And as it seems to me, people often don't like to define themselves. Mm-hmm. And putting a definite on the indescribable feelings and thoughts that fill each of us can be quite exhausting to attempt. There are numerous religions in our world, some that have been around for centuries, and ones that started last week in a musty basement somewhere.
The same can be said for spirituality, but spirituality is different in that it's more fluid. It flows, and it's in all of us. In our indefinable world, it's easier to simply live in the feelings we have than trying to work out the complexities to define what they are. And this was just a thought that I had about when you hear people say, oh, I'm spiritual but not religious, it's often seen as laziness or less than those who define themselves as part of a religion. I don't know why that is. When I was younger, I know once or twice I heard that, and I'm like, oh, that's just because they don't go to church or whatever. But the more I really started to think about that and how I think of that now, and really, is it so bad to be unable to define our own spirituality? And if we know what it means to us, must we be forced to define it for others?
Thank you all. I think we've got a lot to talk about here. I love the question about definition. What is the value of giving definition either to those things that are shared among us or the things that are deeply personal and individual? Love the question about which is bigger, spirituality or religion, experience or some kind of definition. I think that's a very good question. I've been collecting metaphors. You've given me some great new additional metaphors. I think the only person who used the word good or bad was Rolf, unless I missed it from somebody, but he said there's definitely bad religion. I was wondering if there's also bad spirituality as a possible question that we could talk about. I think I'll just add one other metaphor, and then we'll open it up for anybody to discuss. Richard Rohr, who directs the Center for Action and Contemplation, defines religion as a boundary and spirituality as a bridge. So interestingly, he would reverse some of what you said in suggesting that spirituality is more shared, more the things that connect people up from diverse traditions. I appreciate very much what he says about a boundary in that this defining of oneself, perhaps, would be a way to see the boundary, challenges us to go deep in a single place. And so for me as a Lutheran, for example, I can give testament to the way the commitments of my religion have caused me to go way deeper in the sacraments and in the scripture. So I know, I've known all about feelings of hunger and dirt my whole life. But sacramental theology has challenged me to, again and again and again, to go deeper with the hunger notion. What does it mean to be? And because that's been so emphasized in communities to which I belonged, I think there's been tremendous value. When I think about the definition, I think about not just getting it defined and then you're done, but especially in a religion that clings to death and resurrection, you get it defined, and then you're getting started. And you discover the limits of that definition, and you've got to redefine and redefine, and that keeps going deeper. I mean, I would agree that bad religion would be boundaries without bridges, which is to say we need the connections with people who see it differently, and with both within and between religions, I think that's really true. So spirituality as a bridge is that connection to all people who, like you said, Steve, are seeking something greater, something more powerful, meaning and purpose. But when Rohr spins these, you know, bridge and boundaries things, he would also come back to say that a bridge without anchors is really dangerous. And that's what I think is some of your questions about defining. Is that the floating bridges are scary sorts of things if they're not somehow anchored. I think about a relationship that people who know themselves well are able to be stronger in a relationship than people who haven't clarified who they are. So, I'll just offer that and then say we've got a ton of questions before us. What do you all want to talk about or contribute to the discussion? each other.
I like when Patty's talking about, you know, we're all trying to figure it out, and really to absolutely figure it out is way beyond what we're capable of. That's not exactly what you said, but you know.
We probably would have gotten there.
I think that in some ways religious practice is really drawing on other people who've gone before us, their attempts to figure it out. And I mean, like, the whole triune God thing is always, you know, just been like, yeah, that's when people talk about how a certain religion is weird. Like, people talk about Mormons and souls waiting in heaven waiting to be born, to have bodies so that Jesus can come back, you know, then all of a sudden I said, that's weird. But then I look at the notion of the triune God, and I kind of go, anybody from the outside can say, you know, I think is the May Youth Weekend theme this year is three.
The Trinity.
Right. Mm-hmm. We should have a little travel-size Aquafresh toothpaste in every single bag for those kids. Because, you know, it's this toothpaste got three different colors on it.
You see, you think you do have the Trinity figured out.
No, I'm
trying to get toothpaste.
But when you take another look at the Trinity, it's really an acknowledgement that we really can't figure this out. It's basically, we have to, when we say God, we've got to look at it this way, or people before us have looked at it this way, they've studied it, and so I think a lot of religion, is what people have done before us to try to figure it out, and if we think they've got it nailed down, where's faith if you absolutely know it all? I mean, where's the place for faith? That's just knowing.
But I don't think religious leaders or a lot of religious places are really telling that to people. Like, it's okay if you don't have this figured out right now. They're more like, bam, you're going to hell right now if you don't have this figured out right now. At least that's kind of
black and white.
Yeah.
And just grab it.
Yeah. And I think, in a way, having a little wiggle room in the church is actually really nice.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you can go overboard in religion, and you can't go overboard in spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we live in Nashville, and there's nothing wrong with being, you know, but it's definitely this very intense, people are always watching you and sort of how religious you are, how spiritual you are. There's this joke in St. Louis that the first thing that you get asked is, where'd you go to high school? And the whole thing in Nashville is, where'd you go to church? That's the first thing people will say to you. Like, where do you go to church? Where? And it's a little like that place, that one building, defines what they'll think of you for a while after. And that whole idea is just so odd to me that people are so intense and so that you lose sight of what it's really about. And that people that I know who, you know, are my age, they have this feeling of that they do know exactly, that they do have it figured out. And it's sort of like, you can't. I just don't think that I believe that they actually do have it all figured out, and that it's, you know, because they really, sometimes, you know, there's nothing wrong with this, and if you believe this, that's fine, but I hear a lot of my friends say that they go to this extent, like, well, Jesus is my best friend. And I think that it's a different way of looking at it, but I think putting that definition on it seems a little constraining. You know, I don't believe in my best friend like I believe. You know, it's just a different, kind of a weird, it's a not weird, but it's a very different idea of what it is. And they get so caught up in religion that they lose spirituality. And I think you do have to have a balance of both.
And I, with the synth, I was just going to say with that phrase, you know, I'm spiritual but not religious. You know, Yarda described it one way as maybe kind of a laziness or not or you don't go to church, whatever. And I, another sense of it, my sister lives in a little mountain town up in Colorado, and in her area, very much, you know, people are not sort of like the mountain hippies or whatever, you know, they're not, don't want to be connected with the mainline church at all, and they're really strong. It's like, no, I'm spiritual and not religious, and it's like, it's more in the sense that they, like, don't pin me down to a church or a religion, and, you know, I'll do a little Zen over here, and I'll do a little of this, and, but really specific that, that religious sort of puts on those constraints. Don't want to have
any people don't like the boundaries that you're talking about. Maybe that, you know, because I don't know that I've ever heard, people say, I'm spiritual, not religious, but I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody say I'm religious, but not spiritual.
Even though we know there are a lot of it's not a good label that you claim for yourself.
That label might apply to more people more of the time than the other way around.
Yeah. You just don't profess it.
Well, that makes it sound like one is better than the other.
I think both of them make it sound like one is better than the other. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I've never really thought about those, what those words mean to me. But I thought about boundary, and I thought about like a box. Like religion is the box, and spirituality is what you put in it. And I think depending on your tradition or, you know, like the Pharisees, they're very religious, but they probably were. They're spiritual because they had spirits, but their religion was more. Mm-hmm. They wanted to anyone to see what they were doing, and I think if you're really traditional, you have a box with a lid on top, and you only have these confines, and you're only doing these things, and that completely defines you. And if you're maybe a little more open, you take the lid off. But and then sometimes there's holes in the box and the lid's off because you want to be open to other things and other people. But I think when I think about religion, for me, it's kind of my kind of safety net. It's like the Bible's stretched out around me. And these are the confines which when I go, and I want to follow God's word, and I know there's grace, but I also know there's the law, and I know that I'm kind of safe in my spirituality if I stay within these confines. But I think what you said earlier is that I think sometimes we get scared to be a bridge because we're afraid if we listen to someone who, or that only Lutherans or Christians are really spiritual or really religious because we believe in Jesus. But other people can still be spiritual and religious even if they don't believe in Jesus. Mm-hmm. And thinking that because their spirituality doesn't match mine, it can't possibly be real. Mm-hmm. And so I think that almost makes you think differently about stuff.
Weren't boundaries power too? I mean, when religion got more codified and they became the empire's religion, that's power as well, mm-hmm. when you guide how people think. And mm-hmm. To have a bad guy is very convenient mm-hmm. for power. I'm just saying that that really affects, it's in many people's interest to keep that distinction. And, you know, the Pharisees were people too, you know what I mean? It's,
Well, in many ways, I hear lots of you talking about the importance of limits. We can't have it figured out. See, that's a boundary.
Yeah.
That's a limit. That's a box, in a way. Say, there's only so far our knowledge will go. I think it would be really interesting if we would try to list the things that we believe it's important for either religion or spirituality to do for humans as individuals and as communities. And, you know, I'm hearing people talk about sources of strength or power, I mean, encouragement, inspiration, some connection, some of these kinds of things. One of the other things I think about is I think it's that is exactly about what people are saying when you can't figure it all out is what judges the ego. And one of the things that concerns me about spirituality without religion, without answerability to a neighbor or to a heritage or to a wider claim, is that I become the judge of what is helpful and useful, and you know, we end up with very eclectic kinds of things that may or may not go deep, and may or may not be true.
You could also say that your claim to religion is a way of just copying out of actually having to find the truth yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be the
follow the steps.
What some of, you know what I mean? Right. I mean, I don't.
You could.
Yeah. The person that. I mean, what I say to people, well, why are you practicing Christian? Well, it's because I don't want to have to invent the whole thing myself. Given my history and my heritage, and that I don't know, I don't think I'm going to kind of come up with something that's going to further my spirituality more effectively. But there is a side of me that thinks, well, maybe I'm just copying out, and it's okay. That I don't really want to dig in and go to the meditation retreat and practice Zen for 2 years and study the Hindu scriptures and so.
Carol.
Well, I'm really amazed by this conversation and all the ideas and the images that are coming out of it. And one of the things that impresses me is that there is so much of a conversation about the interplay. I mean, I think usually if you would throw out these two terms, in this day and age, you'd get a lot of, most people would throw their weight into spirituality and religion would be over here on this little, this sort of negative connotation. But there's so much about the interplay, and I love Liz's image of the warp and the woof and all the ways that these things intersect. One of the questions that I keep thinking about is where in all this, where what's the catalyst? Where is it that change happens? Because whatever you call this God stuff, it brings something it either brings something new or maybe something old, but it causes people and things and the course of human events to change. What happens in all this that brings anything from social action to personal or growth or shrinkage or vocation? I mean, where does that happen? I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's just a question that keeps coming back to me. Is it an interplay? Is it something totally different? Where's the spark?
So what I'm hearing is, where does the spark go from somebody saying I'm spiritual, not religious, to kind of going the other way to say I'm spiritual and religious? Is that, or I'll call myself religious now? Or,
I guess maybe I don't have I'm just wondering where's the power come out? I mean, where does it, what happens? Something has to happen. Something happens, otherwise we wouldn't be paying attention to these things.
Is it the intersection, or is one catalyzing the other?
Is there something that's catalyzing, or is it just a totally different thing?
Grant, when I mentioned John Newell's book, that's one of the things that impressed me, because his lens was to go down deeper instead of out and about, to find I want to get spirituality. And his was go down deep to the heart of Christ, he says, to the soul of Christ within you, the song of the beginning. And that to him generated everything else. And what was interesting, it wasn't just okay, I got it, now I'm done. It was more like, man alive, this is, and he talked about the cross and just how heavy duty a deal that is, about opening your arms to that pain and suffering too, of the grief we've gone through as humanity, sins to each other, sins against nature and everything. And the reason I'm going into all this heavy stuff is that I think that's where the power comes in our drawing closer to the song of what we are. And I think Christ, that is the beginning, and to me, that's the spark, that's the power. And what religion does sometimes, I think, is an incredible gift. I've given thanks many times for it in terms of my family and drawing all of us together, but sometimes I get so angry because it can be so dead. But it's in the hands of a different speaker or a guitar player, or it's just a different lens. And sometimes it's done really well. Paul, I agree with you that interplay and that call to community is incredibly valuable in religion. So I'd be afraid to lose that. But then you also get the bureaucracy and language that really pisses people off. Yeah, it's just like, come on, I can't see it. I can't see it. You know what I mean?
Carol, to be diplomatic in this discussion, I'll give two answers to your question. So for the experience side of things, I mean, Barbara Brown Taylor's new book says that she thinks the church has faltered under the misconception that the church is the place for encounter with God. And she says the world and life is the place for encounter with God. Mm-hmm. And the church is the place that that encounter is named and supported and celebrated. So the spark would come from the world. You know, something changed, you're having a change in your house, you're telling us about. So there's a spark for transformation in the Mayer household. Because they're going to be empty nest, and you know, how many new songs will come out of that? It'll be great. But I think the second thing, my second response is where the spark comes from is, I think it comes from the scripture. And I find it highly imaginative, and the scripture keeps confronting me with the possibility that I will encounter God in places I have never dreamt I would encounter God. A stranger on the road. A guy who was dead for 3 days, for crying out loud. You know, that these words keep coming about stories that I would never have imagined. If you share it, there will be enough. There is something more powerful than your wrong. I mean, all of these catalyze me to newness, but I would never have thought of them myself. And I don't think it's a cop-out to say that I go to a 4,000-year-old word.
I was not accusing you. I was sharing that
well,
point of view.
I would never have thought of it. I will promise you that. And I will never, you know, and I will never, but that part of what I'm after in this discussion is I think it's got to get concrete and specific. That when it's generic, you love all people, I don't know what that means. And I don't know that that's possible until I get to know Yerda and we chuck wood and we have a conversation and then it's like, oh.
It's easy to love everybody. It's not as easy to love your brother or sister.
Exactly.
Everybody's out there.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, everybody is no catalyst. You know, somebody is a catalyst for knowing that your love is not yet formed. And so, I mean, that's just two stabs at your question. One for experience.
Do you think conviction is kind of a...
What do you mean by conviction?
Like if you, when something, or even what you were talking about earlier, when there's some type of harmony in you, you recognize, it calls your attention to something. Well, like when you're convicted about something, not like in maybe the convicted sense of, well, I'm convicted of that thing I did, but or just a realization like, I have a need. And then you search for a need, or I'm in pain, or I'm sad, or I'm lonely, and you start to search for some type of remedy, and you realize that there's nothing kind of earthly that can give you that remedy. And so you look for, you open yourself up. And we know that God is waiting. And so does he swoop in and say, okay, I'm here? You know? Or then I guess whatever religion you have is kind of, the religion is the finger that points and says, when you feel this way, go here. Or do this. Or works righteousness or whatever. But it kind of sets the tone for how you do what you're going to do when you're feeling how you feel. That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
You know, that that phrase reminded me of an image that's always stayed with me. It's a, I think it's a Zen saying. It's a Buddhist thing. But it's, do not confuse the pointing finger for the moon to which it points. Mm-hmm. And I think the religions have been, you know, fingers that have been constructed over time and cultures and to point us to the moon, you know, as the mystery. And when you know, every so often someone has this clear mystical encounter with the moon, and sometimes those people have founded new religions. You know, they create a different kind of path in their time and culture. But that every religion is constructed to help point us to the moon, and that that moon shining on us, on me, is that personal experience. And if the in its best, the religious stories and rituals and ceremonies and practices will help me to know where the moon is, you know, to gaze upon the moon. But if it's all about the finger, you know, it's like, and there's no spirit in there, it's become, you know, a dead religion instead of a living channel or living means.
I would press one exception to that. I mean, that was beautiful, and I really love it, and I totally agree with it.
And
the one question I have about the finger is what's going to hold us together. Mm-hmm. Because it seems to me that it isn't individual fingers that point us to the mystery. That there's something really powerful about all of us together looking toward the mystery. And while I know the fallibility of institutional religion, I have worked in it. I know it. And it's an impossible kind of thing to defend, though I'm not convinced it's much worse than medical institutions or educational institutions or any other kinds of fingers that forget what they're supposed to be pointing to.
Or families.
But or family. Yeah, loving institutions. But the thing about the institution is that they hold us together. And I as institutions crumble in our world in this moment, I am concerned about what's going to hold us together. Because I've met people I would never have met were we not have been in a congregation. And or had an institution like Holden Village. You know, and if all of us had to worry about our own dinner and our own health insurance and our own place to live, because those are the things the institution provides for us so that we can each do what we get to do. You see, that's what I mean by that. So there is a sense in which the finger matters.
Oh, yeah.
And I agree about the confusion, but at some point I think we've got to give some attentiveness too, to the finger, especially when it's all of us hooked together.
But I just wonder, well, go ahead.
Well, this is a valuable image for me because I have a very personal and sometimes painful dilemma with this conversation right now, which is that I'm a grandmother of two absolutely perfect grandchildren. One's almost three and one is almost one. And I really believe that mystical experience is very common in childhood. That children do have a real sensation of the holy. And now that the 2.5-year-old that's getting closer to three, I want to point him to the moon. You know, that I think that he may be seeing. It's not particularly comfortable to his parents to talk about God. And so I find myself, as grandmother, with great care for their spirit. I don't know how to find a way to describe the moon and to point it without turning to the religious language that I've inherited that has more or less been meaningful and not meaningful, but it's been my language. And so it's very important to me in terms of this, you know, what will hold us together, how to talk to my grandchildren about what I think is the most important experiences in their new lives. You know, and so it's very, I feel it in my own life, that language has morphed from practice maybe to a sort of superstition, to an attachment, to new understanding, to, you know, to it's changed, but I just literally, how do I talk to my grandchildren about this part of life? And something as simple as a blessing at meals, which I think is, you know, utterly essential to this framework of gratitude for abundance, you know, and the Lord is good to me for, you know, this, I think, it drives my daughter right up the wall. You know, there must be something else we can do with you. We can do, Mom. But if we do something that's like, you know, for all, anyway. So language in which to kind of carry this experience into the next generation is something I'm thinking about a lot and with a lot of care, you know, that I want to honor my daughter and her husband's parenting and the way they would choose language, and yet I don't know how to talk.
Yeah.
So.
The finger thing reminded me of something I wanted to say to Yerda. Okay, I can't be totally sure about this, Heidi, but I'm pretty sure about this, that lazy spirituality is no worse than lazy religion. And part of the dilemma we have of religion in our day is that we've not been vigorous enough about pursuing the stories and the rituals and the moon that is in them. We're very lackadaisical. So that it's
what do you mean by pursue?
Pursue?
When you say we're lazy and not pursuing the images.
Well, I mean, for example, reading the Bible.
Okay.
So Christians would assert that the Bible is a sacred text, but the statistics about how much we know of it.
Yeah. Okay.
And the inability of many Christians to identify something from the Bible or from Benjamin Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac, for example, it has not been pursued. I mean, so I said that the, you know, my own experience of the sacred really depends on the sacraments. I could not say that were I not practicing in those sacraments, it would make no sense. Though our claim on one another to be regular participants in those sacraments is thin, at best, or lazy, to use Yoda's word. I mean, I think there's a danger of some laziness in spirituality too. And one of the things that I'm getting from the discussion is that some of the things that are bad about both of them, and some of the things that are gifts in both of them, and it's why I wanted us to talk, so that we would be connected. Jacob hasn't had a chance to come back in yet. I don't know. You doing okay?
I'm doing okay.
All right. Anybody else? Go ahead, John.
I think a lot of reasons why, one reason why people, or at least I feel, hesitant about embracing religion is I don't like the feeling of limits on myself. And I feel we're talking about boxes and certain amount of constraints and codes and stuff like that. And in some way, spirituality is attractive because it seems very freeing to have all the choice in the world, really, whatever you want to do. And to go back, I don't feel like I am limited by religion, but at the same time, I think about this idea of limits. We see that as a negative thing, but perhaps we should see it as a positive thing. For example, in art, when you're an artist, you work within a specific medium, and rather than constraining you, those limits are a challenge to deepen your understanding of what you're working in, like sonnets or haiku, or you're a potter, you work with clay, and instead of making that a shallow artistic expression, it forces you to dig deeper. So I think in some ways, that's one value of religion, in that, like you're saying, instead of just, it forces you to go down to what you thought you knew and experience new things that you never would have expected within that framework.
Mm-hmm. Kate, you're going to say something?
Well, I was just responding to your comment about being more vigorous, having more vigorous religion. And in my experience, very religiously vigorous people can easily fall into worshiping the finger, you know.
That's true.
Or, and I think that your Bible example is
God,
a perfect one.
The worst finger.
In the sense we get into, like, Bible is God versus Bible directs us towards God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my word.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I would say is that even to say the Bible points us to God suggests that you need to know what it says. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Otherwise, it ceases to be much of a pointer. And so it's frustrating. And one of the things, when we were talking about, there was some baseball bat sort of imagery going on in the panel, that I find that many times the people who are the most, not vigorous is a good word for me, but absolutist is a particular kind of vigor. That somewhere the most absolutist have only read a few verses. You know? And that really, the more of it you read, the less absolutist you can be about, because there are 66 voices there, at least, and they are very distinctive.
And I think that whole thing about revolving around six verses that you quote, and thinking that that's the only thing that was in there.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's it. It's a lot of the vigor that comes with Bible study that leads to pointing the finger. I think it's just the whole pedagogy of what we know of how to read the Bible is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it.
Yes.
I don't think we teach people how to read the Bible. A friend of mine, of ours who's here, who's Jewish, she learned how to read the Torah very critically.
Mm-hmm.
And she grew up with both religions, and she just said that she decided on Judaism because they taught me how to be critical. In the Christian religion, they taught me how to memorize.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, oh, well, if I had the choice, I probably would have chosen that one too.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the hermeneutic is a way to read the Bible, and the hermeneutic of saying you got a question, you look at this verse, and it gives you the answer, is limited at best and wrong in many ways.
So why don't we teach people to read and learn about the Bible more critically?
But I mean, in general.
Why do not you teach it?
Why do not?
But you're not afraid of the question.
I think it's dangerous. I think it's a threat. It's a threat to what we want to see the Bible as. To say that this was written that there are three creation stories and they contradict each other, and that this book was, we don't know who wrote this book. This guy stole this much of this gospel from, you know, I mean, all that stuff that when you start taking that apart, then the notion that this is the infallible, flawless, direct divine word of God, which, you know, I think when push comes to shove, when you know that stuff, you kind of got to go, okay, maybe not exactly. But it's comforting to still look at it that way. And so if we teach our children that, well, you know, yeah, well, the earth was blah, 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 blah. You know, there's all kinds then it threatens the way we look at the Bible. The other side of it is, though, if we don't teach it that way, eventually we see it and we have to resolve that somewhere. I mean, it's not like most of us don't know those things, but still, we're here.
And you see, that's such a great resource for what Heidi is worried about, because when you have three specific approaches which contradict each other, you know you can't get it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know so much more than you did before you didn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But
thing that always worried me about, you know, taking so much from the Bible and just that is that how much is lost in translation, and that it's very, if you do look at it from that critical point of view, you know that people have added things or changed. You know, I can't believe that things haven't changed in thousands of years of, you know, I see, this is a very, very loose comparison, so bear with me here, but like when you go on Wikipedia and people can put stuff in and take things out, and how some people don't see it as a credible source because it's not, that's, you know, to the extreme, but I just mean that sometimes you do have to take things not so seriously as this is the only way it can be, so you can really, you know, mess yourself up with that.
But you see, to take them seriously is not to say it's the only way it can be. the ancients, when books had to be hand copied, the reverence for the text was so much greater than in our day. And while there are variants, and when you learn the languages, you learn to read them, and that matters. There are variants in the text. The amount of consistency in the text is so much greater than the variants. But the bigger thing is the tensions in times and seasons, times of history. You know, so Jerusalem will never be destroyed. Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Jerusalem isn't destroyed. You know, then there's not just one thing you can say about Jerusalem and God in Jerusalem, and that is a thing of really cool.
And also the process of canonization of what books got in, what got
exactly.
out, which group gained power because these books got in, and which groups in the Roman Church lost power because these books didn't get in. You look at all that stuff and you kind of go, okay, well, if God had a hand in this, God sure had a complicated system going.
I don't know why we're so afraid that these fingers are all human fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
That are pointing.
Well,
it's like they're all human fingers, and there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
That's.
But somehow we get freaked out. It's like it has to be God's finger. It's God's finger. It's not a human finger.
I think some of that anger, though, comes from the fact that a lot of people were told it was.
Yes.
God's own, you know what I mean? It was God's finger to me, but it was God's revelation to a human being. Why are we so unbelieving of the fact that we can be carriers of this?
Well, you're back to the confusion between the finger and the moon. That, you know, to look at it, the Bible pointing beyond itself, and a lens through which you see. But we've got a question. Paul.
Oh, I think it's soon time to wrap up.
I think that's right.
A founding sentence at Holden was, the gospel lives by controversy. And it is in the conversation that the gospel is able to be reborn continually. And so you can sleep in that.
Thank you all for your contributions.